Hi, I'm Eric Nakamura. We're at Giant Robot 2, and I'm with David Horvath, the creator, or one of the creators of Ugly Dolls.
Yeah, how are you?
Or is it Ugly Doll?
It's Ugly Doll, but right, the Ugly Doll Dolls.
Is it? Ugly Doll Dolls?
It's however you say it.
I feel like saying Ugly Dolls all the time, but I used to say Ugly Doll.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay. Everybody says Ugly Dolls. I have to say Ugly Doll Dolls. Ugly Doll brand, just Ugly Doll.
How do you go about doing that? Is it like a... Not doing the brand, but I mean, do you actually say Ugly Dolls ever?
Oh, yeah, I say it all the time. I don't get that official. You know, if you call our 1-800 number, I'm not going to really get all official on you. It's okay. But I do write it that way.
Ugly Doll?
Because they're not ugly dolls. And when you look at them, they're not ugly. Although we do, like, that's kind of the whole point, that they're not ugly. So you see the name and you go, oh, huh, that's funny. And then you look at it and, oh, yeah, well, they're not really ugly. They're maybe a little strange and a little awkward looking. And they have funny little twists and turns, but they're not really that ugly. Oh, I think they're cute. Huh, that's funny. Then the whole point, actually, one of the first conversations that I ever had with Sun Min was about what ugly really means to us.
Okay, who's Sun Min?
Sun Min is the one who does all the hard work. That's my wife. Sun Min, you know, even though I had sent her that first drawing, man, it was over 10 years ago, she's the one that really took that and translated it into a plush doll. And that was her first time sewing anything, so I can only imagine how it's going to go once she gets actual lessons.
It's already been, like, more about 10 years now, right? Or just, are we hitting 11 now?
Yeah, it's 11 years. Yeah, almost. Yeah, almost 11 years.
So, how do you go about... I mean, there's a huge product line, right? For those who don't know or who haven't gone to certain shops, there's a huge product line of ugly dolls. See, I feel like saying ugly dolls right there.
Yeah, you go right ahead.
Huge product line of ugly doll. Okay, anyway, ugly dolls. Anyway, so...
Yeah.
Are you actually involved with every product, or are there some other designers that are making products and you're just kind of looking going, oh, that's perfect, great.
Involved is the key word now. Yeah, we're involved in everything. We do have a small but incredibly talented product design team at the office now. And they kind of help with, because now we're beyond just doing plush. And Sun Min and I design all of the characters, the actual story and the characters and the actual plush. And if there's new characters, that'll just be the two of us. But then when we get into... Okay, well, we have to make the tin coin bank. In the beginning, all the tin toys, I was sitting down personally with the guys from Schilling, and they're this incredible company out of Massachusetts, and they do the all of our tin toys.
They've been around for a long time.
Yeah, yeah, and they're fantastic. But now, just before, we weren't really making anything other than the plush, some action figures, which Sun Min and I did all on our own. But now... We'll supply the actual artwork, but then we have a kind of a product team that works back and forth to make sure that all the samples are coming out right and to make sure that everything, the quality is 100%. So we'll be there for the birth. We're there for the inception, with the initial spark, and then we're there for the actual birth. But they kind of help with... They know it so well now that they know what to look for. Like, oh, Ox's eyes are flipped reverse, so... Sun Min and I don't have to deal with that part anymore.
That's kind of obvious, though, but what about... I mean, are there, like, ever times where things show up and you're like, oh, that's not the right shape, and you could look at it and know right away?
Yeah, sure.
Or just a little off. Oh, the head, it's supposed to be rounder than this, or... You know what I mean? Those little details that... I don't know, how many people have the green light on actually knowing how on it is or how off it might be?
We have a couple people at the office who know us well enough... Where if it's obvious, it's off. But there is a magic formula that in the end we're gonna Sun Min and I have to take a look and tweak it 1 millimeter this way or that way to make it just right. And that's just because all of my drawings are so horrible that everyone else is really good. So that's the problem. This is too correct. It's got to be. They say like the perfect drawing is if you flip it in the mirror and it still looks good, then you've got a great drawing. Well, all mine look horrible. When I draw something, I think it's good, but that's just my imagination. And it's not. And that's our magic formula.
I noticed too, it was a while ago where there was an ugly doll on the cover of Giant Robot. I remember zooming in, because it's an Illustrator file, right? It had nodes, like points. And I was looking at it going, hey, okay, so this point turns into, you know, it should have been a smooth curve, but it actually had a point if you look closely at it. And I remember I showed that to you, and I was like, is this, you know, and I was I think I circled them in Photoshop. You know, I just made a circle. Go, is this on purpose? Is this on purpose? I found all the little weird parts, and you were like, yeah.
it's on purpose because it exists. There, you know, that especially even for the books, the cover was done in Illustrator. Well, it was actually drawn in Flash with a Wacom tablet and their paintbrush tool.
Right.
And then you can open it in Illustrator.
Yeah.
I don't know how to use Illustrator.
But then it creates points, and sometimes those points aren't exact. Like, they'll be a little weird.
Yep.
But it seems like you just leave them, right?
Yeah, we just leave them. We just leave them because that's the whole theme. That's... don't try to cover up or hide the little funny things that make you unique, man. That even goes for our artwork. That may not look so great when you blow it up into a giant Hollywood Boulevard poster. Maybe I'll get some help with that someday. I don't know if we're going to ever have that or not. But but you know, even the books. You know, I just use a pen straight away. There's no pencil or sketches. It's just all one big mistake. No eraser.
So I guess. You mentioned Hollywood billboards. Can you talk about that? What can you talk about your making ugly dolls into something that people can watch?
Yeah.
I guess you could watch an ugly doll right now, but, you know.
Yeah, all right.
Moving, well, talking, whatever it's doing.
Yeah, well, on Instagram, we throw them all, you know, we throw them across the street and just take pictures as they're in the midair. But, well, we've been working with Illumination for a couple years now, and there's... We're working on it. We've been working on the Ugly Doll movie. Sunman and I have been working on the story for a long time, and it's a fantastic process. And it's just we're so far so good.
How far away are you from, I guess, you know, completion?
I don't know. We'll know when we get there. We're just working away.
Has any been like animated already? Like, have you watched any of it?
Is
it live action?
No, it's not. No, that would be great. No, yeah, it's just me. I just paint myself orange and Sunman is purple. And we just filmed it with an iPhone. No, it's with Illumination are the guys they're basically Universal's animation company, you know. I don't know what you would call it. But they do all the kids animate, like Despicable Me. They did Hop, which was kind of like live action. They did Lorax, that Dr. Seuss one that just came out. Cool. They're really fantastic. So we almost since the day we started, we've been on this search for how we'd be able to tell our story in an animated form the right way. And it took us years and years to find the right people, and they're really fantastic. So we're very happy.
Cool. Your time thing? You know, you've got a certain amount of time that you can work on everything. How much of it is, let's say, this film project versus product development versus... And also your visits to Target and Toys R Us.
Yeah, I love... You know, I go to Target every morning. When we're in the U.S., I go to Target every morning. If we're in Korea, I go to E-Mart every morning. If we're in Japan, I just go to any store every morning. Yeah. It doesn't matter. That's different. 7-Eleven, Tokyu Hands, or just a local, like, mom and pop. I'm addicted to going into these shops and looking at what toy companies are doing and just what other brands are doing. I like looking at everything and just watching and learning, yeah, for sure. As far as our time goes, we're probably working on way too much all at the same time. 'Cause just working on a movie, that really does take up all of your time, but then also we have this whole brand to run and to operate. So that's also taking up all of our time. So we're doing both and only have time for one, but we're doing both.
So that leaves like a lot of, I guess, questions about what about your like free time or your leisure time? Because, you know, I know you've got a family and you've got to do family stuff too at some point, I'd hope. Even though your kind of family is sort of working together.
Oh, absolutely.
How do you like break off, or when do you break off? And
you know those stories of all those really successful CEOs that then when they're writing their book and they're getting older and they go, oh, but I didn't really spend time with my family.
Right.
And they're so huge. I didn't do that. So So it's I actually spend most of my time with my family, and then you have the movie, and then managing the brand also. Whatever happens with us, like I guess by the end, you know, like or by my end, but you know, hopefully it'll go be past my time here. But this will be, you know, I'll be the case study for, well, this is how it goes when you really do put your family first as far as spending actual time with them. Whatever happens, that's that scenario. That's how it goes under those conditions. We've already seen how it goes. It can go really well in the other way where, you know, XYZ executive or creator or founder kind of has no time for their family, and you can... You can actually bring a brand to such heights that were unimaginable, you know, just a couple decades ago. But if you can do that for a brand, imagine what you can do for your kids.
Can you explain how do you... I mean, you go to Target, you go to Toys R Us. How important is that? Like going, why do you go daily? And then how important is that? Because I know other people who make brands, they have their own companies. I know that if they, let's say they do go to Target, they'll go once, right? Maybe they'll go back 2 months later. But I do notice you check in, because I'm your buddy, right? I'm Square or whatever. You're checking in often. I'm wondering, what are you looking for? How important is it?
Yeah, I would say that the weekly and monthly visits are... The mom and pop shops, local. You know, I come by here to say hi to you. You're working hard doing. But the thing we love about visiting Target and these other places is the rapid change, and how just you can go in two days and just everything's completely different. If you go once a week, you're just missing out. Plus, I'm just completely addicted to brands and watching how, you know, not just in toys, but how these guys operate and why things suddenly get this much shelf space and why this was moved over here. I'm really obsessed. I'm getting obsessive over such things. Well, I have been for a long time.
So how do you? I guess there was kind of a little bit of a huff. I guess when a. Huh. Wait, does that mean snorting? Anyways, no, I'm not getting at snorting. There was a little bit of an issue with when Ugly Dolls went into Toys R Us. How, you know, can you explain like why you decided to get Ugly Dolls into Toys R Us?
Yeah, well, we knew that there would be some, I guess you would say, ruffled feathers, I guess, over it.
Yeah, or ruffled felt. Ruffled fabric.
Yeah, of course.
Ruffled plush. I don't know.
Yeah. We went there for the small shops, really. You know, they carry a certain percentage of everything that we make. But if you find Ugly Doll at Toys R Us and then you're, you know, interested in it, the only way you're really going to be able to kind of complete your collection or to really get the full scope is to now go discover them in your small mom and pop shop. You know, we were noticing it wasn't so much for the big cities, but for in the middle of the country and. Like in small towns, the small local shop would have their set of like 30 regulars, whether it's in a mixture of adults and kids, and that was it pretty much. Then what happened is when we went to Toys R Us,
30 regular customers, you mean?
Well, like that, yeah, like the 30 set Ugly Doll fans who would come in for the new releases, other customers, but in the end there wasn't that much new discovery. They kind of knew all the familiar faces. But then what happened was after Toys R Us, they had a bunch of guys coming into the store like, oh, I had no idea this place was here, and I had no idea that, you know, you guys were even here. Because I guess a lot of shoppers only go to big box, and they only go to the, you know, Toys R Us is not really even big box, it's like specialty. Because they only carry toys. And I think they have less locations than Party City, where we also are.
Yeah.
No one got upset about the party stuff, though.
That's but true. I think it, Party I City think it doesn't helped. Have plush, right?
No. Party City doesn't have plush. But I think it helped a lot of the small shops kind of get discovered by a larger audience, you know? But, of course, for sure, there were some shops where they felt like, oh, man, well, this was supposed to be something that only I had that kind of made me different from Toys R Us. But I still feel the same way that I think what makes these small shops different from other places is the people there and what, you know, how they present everything and what they mean to the community and what, you know, the experience that you get when you go into these places, I think is always key. So I think that we've enhanced that.
I think so too, actually. I feel like, well, by putting it, being in Toys R Us, just from my own retail experience, it just seems like more people know what Ugly Doll is, even more, not just that it exists, but the product range. They'll see and they'll go, dude, there's a lot of Ugly Dolls. There's not just 10.
Right.
There's more than 10. But then I think that just brings an awareness because you don't go to Toys R Us to buy all 30 at once.
Right.
Or
right.
20 or 10. You buy one, two, yeah. But then when you go somewhere else, you're like, oh, well, there's the 28 other ones. I guess I'll buy one. And then yeah. You go to another place, oh, I'll buy one. But I kind of feel like that's kind of how Ugly Dolls is, that you're not going to ever own all of them. Well, very few do. So if you do, you guys are awesome. But I feel like you're not supposed to own them all. You can, but you're not necessarily, that's not what it's really meant to do. So I feel like no matter where you go, there's an Ugly Doll. It's not like everyone's competing against each other. You're sort of, I don't know. I feel like it's kind of more of a thing where you could just go somewhere else and get one. That's kind of my general feeling.
Right.
So we still sell Ugly Dolls very well at Giant Robot, even if Toys R Us has them. You know?
Yeah, it's two different worlds kind of discovering each other. I think that like if you guys, you know, in a big city like L.A. or New York City, it may play a little differently. But we've heard back from, you know, there was a shop in Indiana, and I wish I could remember the name. I don't remember if it was really Indiana or not.
Oh, okay.
But I heard back
from... Small town shop, whoever you are, we're thinking about you.
Yeah, and we heard that, oh, well, you know, this many, now I have this many more customers who just didn't know I was here because they didn't think to shop in this part of, you know.
Pure discovery then. That's even better.
Yeah, you're right. And you can, right, you find these small shops, and then there is a huge sense of discovery because they carry, you know, most of the line, whereas at Toys R Us you're kind of introduced to a very general, just like it's a good place to start. It's like a beginner's guide to Ugly Doll. And then when you do discover these small shops, you realize, oh wow, look at what they have, and I didn't even know this was here. And that kind of sense of discovery, that's what, you know, that's what I remember when I was going to the Culver City Toys R Us when I was 7 and 8 years old, and
that thing was I was so little too. I actually went to that same Toys R Us. That was a special treat though. It was very rare. I got to go there once every, I feel like, 6 months or
same here.
Maybe it wasn't very often, but when I did, it was like, wow, that was Disneyland on steroids. It was the greatest place ever.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that was also when we did go there. The great thing is that they worked really well with us, so that we got the, I don't know if you've seen the sections that we've had there, but
I've just seen one. I've been there just once in the last little while. I should be going every day like you, but I'm
not. the daily routine at Target is more, that's like an Indiana Jones going hunting exploration routine for me.
Yeah, what have you just... Oh, wait, I remember one time you showed me these things called Ninja something, and they spin? Is that what it is? Ninja Tops or Ninja... Some kind of...
Is that Ninjago? Those are the Ninja Legos. That. Those are enormous.
No, not huge. Ninja Lego. It was like some other thing that I've never heard of, and you were saying, this is the hottest thing ever. And I was like... It was like a little package in it. Some Ninja thing, I thought.
Really? Oh, wow. That I brought back from Target?
Oh, you had it, and I was like, why do you have this?
Are you sure it wasn't Ninja Legos?
It's not Lego at all. It was something else.
They say Ninja...
Maybe that's what it is.
I think now it's actually called Ninjago, but I thought it was Ninjago. I really like that. It's like
that,
a little Lego guy on a round spinner.
Oh, that's what it is. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And you said it's the hottest thing ever, and then...
I may have kept the Lego Ninja and just brought you the spinner part. I probably just gave you the extra accessories and said, wow, man, this is cool. Because it is. I don't know. It's pretty cool.
So I got a question, too, about your characters, Ugly Dolls. They're the classic ones or the new ones. How fast does a character get born? Not product-wise, but in terms of just the shape and...
Well, the focus still for us is the really original guys like Wage, Babo, Ice Bat, Ox, Wedgehead, Jiro. Those are the ones, like, if you find all the books and all the other non-plush goodies that are out there, they've always kind of been our focus. So then the rest of the guys are like, we're filling out the universe, the side characters or the co-stars, and then the guys who are in the books just kind of in the background. So that was what the Citizens of the Uglyverse sort of line was, sort of like the, to you know, we get a lot of letters. Well, who's that guy? Who's that weird yellow guy that you drew? And I realized, oh yeah, well, I guess we better make some of those guys.
Uh-huh.
But it's always been about, for us, it's always been about Wage, Babbo, Ice Bat, Ox, and following those core guys around, and everyone
what
else.
About Trey?
Yeah, Trey is very important. Yeah, she. Okay. She's
she?
Very important.
It's a she, right?
Yeah, we have some really cool Trey. For Trey fans, you'll be very happy. And well, oh gosh, well, yeah, it's still a couple years from now.
Okay,
but you hopefully you will like it. There hasn't been anything on Trey since the Critterbox figure. I think
it's been a little while.
Yeah,
is it because of the flower? It's kind of hard to make a flower.
Yeah, right? No, I don't know. Maybe it was a Critterbox one, and she was a Coca-Cola bottle cap figure though.
Oh, that's cool. I do remember that.
The other guys didn't get to be that one of those.
No, but I was asking about how fast is it that you draw a new one? Like, can you just sit with a pad and just, like, all of a sudden make five new characters in 5 minutes? Or is it a longer process to actually create a brand new ugly doll shape, I guess, or character shape?
I think that the one thing about the how we work, I'm constantly drawing new guys all the time. But then it's when I sit down with Sunmin, and she starts to circle parts from this one and the personality from that one. And that's, I think, when it works best is when we're sitting together. And we don't really have a formula. We just kind of bounce things around back and forth. And the end result is it then, you know, after going through hundreds of different versions, we'll end up with one new guy.
So where is this sketchbook at?
Oh, it's at, well, actually, we do have a huge kind of like a vault now of all the not rejects, but the ones, you know, the circled eyes from this guy, the funny arms from that guy.
The sketchbook must have like 100 more extra characters that could be developed in any moment, right?
Yeah, right, yeah. Well, I think we did most of that work years ago. So, you know, the ones that are coming out for the next 5 years were invented, you know, 5 to 10 years ago. So we're not really making new guys as we go, very rarely anyway.
So you're making, is it two characters a month? Am I wrong? Or is it two characters every couple months?
We were. We had a certain number in mind that we wanted to get to. It's not like other, well, I don't want to mention other, well, it's not like where there's just 20 new guys every year.
Sure.
There has been, because we wanted to reach a certain number, because we wanted to have this kind of cast of characters that everyone would be familiar with, that then we could, okay, now we can just play with these. It's sort of like, maybe I can compare it to The Simpsons, where you have your poster of the whole cast.
Yeah.
But now that you've got that whole poster of everybody, it's very rare that there's a real new regular brought in.
I see. Because there's all these new characters. Obviously, I see the new plushes all the time.
Yeah.
The brand new ones, just, I'm like, oh, there's a new character, right? And but then I'm wondering, does it ever happen where a newer one is kind of becoming its own star? Like, bigger than, almost as big as your original eight, or, you know what I mean? Has there been any new ones that just show up and you're like, I did not expect this guy to be, you know, popular?
Yeah. I think that...
There's always the next generation of...
That's true.
So I'm wondering if that's happened to you, or are you starting to see a little, you know, traction with certain characters more than others that are brand new?
It goes year by year when they're new. There's always one that really sticks out. I think the Ninja Batty Shogun was one of the newer ones that everyone really...
I was kind of getting to that, too. That was one of the ones I was thinking was, well, sort of a hit character.
He was really popular. So then he got turned into a Blocks figure and a Pop figure by Funko.
Right.
Because, like, for new figures and new sculptural projects, we kind of try to stick with Wage and Ox and Ice Bat and Babbo and the real main guys. But just, there were so many Ninja Batty fans that we had to go for him.
Cool.
I can't remember who got bumped for him to get made, but
that's an example. It's just kind of awesome how that just kind of develops out of. Is it just the fans? Are you guys pushing it sort of in, you know, behind the scenes, or is it just the fans doing it?
I think it's we don't do much pushing. I don't except for Giant Robot Magazine. I don't think we've really placed any ads, except for maybe in, you know, the trade magazines right before a trade show. We'll place like a, hey, we're in this booth, but we haven't really done any. We had that one UglyCon billboard,
really?
But that's about it. And as far as new characters, actually for 2013, there's not that many new characters coming. We're actually back to our old schedule where I think there's like between two to four new guys. which is how it was back in 2008. We kind of got everyone out. The guys that we wanted to release by a certain time, we've done so. And now we're kind of going back and doing new versions. Like in front of me here, I've got the Ugly Buddies.
Very cool.
And they're hitting our warehouse today.
Awesome.
So we're going to start shipping them out. I think it is on Monday.
Cool.
And so now we're going back.
Let's explain that real
quick. Yeah.
Ugly Buddies. It looks like, actually, I knew about them already. Of course, I heard about them from Dean, Mr. Dean.
Yeah, he tells me.
He tells
me about what's coming.
Jane Goodall of Ugly Dolls. He kind of knows everything. So he was telling me about these, and yeah, here now I get to see one. So it's an ice bat holding a wage. It looks like. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a wage, right?
Yeah, they're kind of like
kind of cute.
Smaller, a little bit smaller size, and they're holding a little.
Oh, so this isn't a typical 12-inch size.
Is, I guess, the same size as the Citizen.
Citizen, okay, so it's a little shorter, and I guess the little one's a keychain size. Am I wrong?
Yeah, okay. I think they're almost the same size as the keychain.
Cool.
The clip size. So it's like an ugly doll holding an ugly doll, and we've received a few questions from adults and kids asking, well, is he holding a doll or is it a small? Is it like an infant? Like, how does it work within the universe?
See, these are the fans talking. I didn't even think of that. I just figured it's just an ugly doll holding an ugly doll. Like, really cute.
Yeah. Well, for me,
That's a great question. What is it?
Well, for me, this was Ice Bat holding a doll of Wage.
But, okay.
But, you know, we don't really say that in here, so there's no rules, you know. However you want to sit them at the dinner table is up to you. You know, that's not my call. Once it leaves our warehouse, you know, that's all on you.
Have you seen the pictures of people's collections at all?
Have you ever seen those? Yeah. We love getting those.
That's amazing.
We still get pictures all the time. We get a lot more. I wish they would post them on our Facebook page. We get a lot of emails, and it's like, oh well. And then I guess I'll say it here. Yeah, if you've got a huge collection, please post it on Facebook. We would love to share it with everyone. Well, anything that you can share. we've seen some pretty massive collections and some pretty interesting collections. Like we've seen where they'll only collect Ice Bat, or it'll be character specific, or it'll be color specific.
Oh, I see.
It's been a lot of fun to get a lot of that back.
Yeah, no, I see pictures every so often. I'm always amazed when I see most of it that I've seen with the huge collections aren't kids. They're kind of adults, maybe, right? They're
30s,
40s. Is that why? Yeah, disposable income. But yeah, the collections, I guess to describe for people who don't know, the collections I've seen are like 50 dolls or more, maybe 60 or, you know, like I've seen some with 10. Yeah, that's one thing. But I've seen some with 50, 60.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen that for sure.
What's the most?
I think they have more than we do in some cases. I don't know. And I should rephrase disposable income, because the truth is when we... And this is really what keeps us going, and how we're able to work on all this and not completely lose it, is that it's not even seen as, oh, I'm just spending my money and buying these things. That these things are like a part of their life. Like literally, like really, they're at like the table with them, and we're like buckled in the back seat of the car, you know, with them and with adults doing that. And it's... that was kind of like the idea, you know, initially. And so we're really happy to see that. It's, you don't just see a big pile. That the care that goes into how they display them and care for them and how much they know about them, that man, that just blows us away. That's like, okay, you know, and then that inspires us to do better and to keep it as great as we can. Because whatever we're doing them for those guys, you know.
And also, the prices aren't very high. I guess I'm allowed to say that they're pretty inexpensive.
Yeah, we've kept the same, like on the regular plush. We've kept that same price for 10, 11 years.
Yeah, it's been pretty. It's kind of generous, I guess. Even the original Handmaids that when I first met you and you were doing the handmade ones, or
Sunmin,
you and Sunmin, yeah, you were making the handmade ones.
I was bringing them to you.
I forgot. I was trying to remember what the retail price was even then.
I think the handmade ones were $30 then,
or 40, maybe 30. I can't remember, but it was. I remember it wasn't that much more than the actual. The big production lines.
The production ones. We're 30 for the first like 2 months, just because we otherwise wouldn't have been able to afford to make them at all. But then once we got going, we brought them. They've been 20 ever since.
Was that an intentional thing to keep that original price low? Because I know a lot of people go, oh, this took 2 hours, 3 hours. I don't know how long one takes for Sunmin to make by hand. But, you know, you prorate that and you're like, that's $10 an hour. Or,
yeah.
You know, and that's not a lot. So was there an intention to, like, just keep it down anyway?
Because that was Sunmin's idea, yeah. Yeah. She didn't want to do it according to the amount of actual physical effort that went into it. And it was more, it, you know, if you find that on the shelf, what really would that cost? And the only reason it was 30, not 20, is because she sent them over to me via FedEx. And so that was really pricey. So we were just sort of breaking even. So it was, as long as we weren't losing money, and as long as there was like $5 left to buy the next roll of fabric, you know. And the crazy thing was that fabric that didn't really exist. It looks like fleece, but it's actually not fleece. I guess it's fleece-based. And the one company that was making this bizarre fabric had long gone out of business. And Sunmin bought the very last roll. So we've been making our own ever since.
Wow. So how do you go about making making fabric for ugly dolls?
When Sunmin had to go back to Korea,
yeah,
which was devastating, but that's how this whole thing started. You know, her student visa ran out. This was like, you know, 11 years ago. And so when she went back to Korea, she found this fabric just like, almost literally across the street from where she was in Seoul. And so just by luck that when she had to go back there, that she came across this.
So what were they using this fabric for? Do you know, like beforehand? Were they for bathrobes? What were they for?
I don't really know. The one vendor who had it kept shaking up, you know, according to Sunmin, he was kind of saying, no, you don't want this. This is not good for anything because it stretches and it's no good for making clothes and it's no good for anything. And then he tried to kind of talk her off, you know, get her away from it and like kind of talk her down from buying it. She didn't really explain what it was going to be used for, and I guess it's perfect for that.
So now, is this called? Do you guys call that ugly fabric or
what? Ugly fur? Yeah,
ugly fur.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
So I guess you guys don't sell just the roll of this ugly fur.
No. Okay. No. That's all for us. And you know, it looks like it's just fleece, no problem. But when we were working with Chronicle Books, and they wanted to do like that fabric on the notebook covers,
they did, right?
Yeah, well, they kind of got it right. That's fleece.
So that's fleece. All right.
Yeah, because we were still just we were able to make enough for what we were making, but we didn't have the capacity to make any more than that.
Right.
And they needed to get these things out, so they said, "Oh no, this is easy. It's just fleece. We'll be able to make this, no problem." Right. So they just went off and did it, and then they came back like, "Oh man, what in the world is that stuff? It's not fleece, is it? It's something bizarre. It's like
actually, you're right." If you look closely at it, there's a pattern, and it's not a pattern, but like I could see the, I don't know.
Yeah, there's
is it wool kind of weaving or whatever it is,
nappiness to it.
Yeah, the nappiness. That's the right word. Exactly.
I think because we were just not pro at making toys at all, so and just not doing it right, and that's what happens when you do it completely wrong. Because all these other companies are so slick that they just, you know, their factories would never think to even put this in front of their face, or I don't know. We've gone to different places in Hong Kong and in, you know, all over the place looking to see if there's any rolls of this stuff out there. And, yeah, you know, you just get fleece pretty much. That's the closest you can get. So we had to make our own.
So since Ugly Dolls has come out, Ugly Doll has come out.
It's all right. I'm kidding.
It's been out for a while. There's been plenty of other, like, you know, characters. I guess people are inspired by your work, but have you seen anything that's, it's its own thing, but it's, you think it's kind of got the potential or vibrancy to be, you know, like an Ugly Dolls? Not the next Ugly Dolls, but
no,
it's next own thing, but, you know, kind of inspired by you. Because, you know, this is like a multiple character kind of an idea that has like legs forever, I guess. You know, well, basically you can do anything with Ugly Dolls at any time.
I haven't found
it. It could be an Olympics mascot, you know. It can be, right? It can be anything.
Yeah, we probably should have been. We would have been done. But I know, I'm happy with. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if this. Definitely something comes to mind. I don't think it was inspired by us, but I would say the next thing which came out. It came out in 2010. It's called La La Loopsie.
Uh-huh.
La La Loopsie. It's like this. I don't know if it's for preschool or for. It's just. It's. I guess supposedly it's for girls. It's like a doll. It's like a plastic rag dolls by uh-huh. MGA. And I think they're just brilliant. I think it's the best thing to come along in the last decade, for sure. I've never really seen anything like it, and I highly recommend picking those up. It's a mass, you know, you can get them in specialty stores, but it's a mass market I mean, they've got it at Target and Toys R Us. It's everywhere. But I've never seen this, like the packaging, the level of detail in the clothing and in the quality of the plastic and just the colors, everything that went into it. And then you look at the retail price and you kind of shake your head like, that's incredible that there's another company like this out there doing. You can't, just knowing what I know now, you can't imagine how special this line is. It's just, you know, anyone else out there in the toy industry is probably like, you know, yeah, right now. It's just incredible. It's a fantastic line.
So as you like it so much, or you're mentioning it a lot, and you really like it, what happens when it does go to Target and it gets kind of blown out? Is there a worry that next year it's gone? 2 years it's gone?
Well, I think that line that I'm talking about started out there. Like, I don't think it started in specialty.
But is that like a dangerous kind of a way to start?
It could be. You know, I don't know.
It obviously started somewhere smaller. But
well, these guys are doing it right. Where I think what I see is what they're doing. It's gonna last forever. You can kind of see when some companies take something to mass, and you almost assume that they only want to be around for 2 years. Like they kind of, there's this weird formula that others seem to follow where, yeah, we're going to ride the big wave and then we're just going to, it's kind of a get in, get out. Well, anyway, we're going to have the next thing. So who cares? And
sure.
Wow. That's not what
I see. That's built in boardrooms, huh?
I guess so. and maybe there's nothing wrong with that. If I don't know. I'm not really against it, but that's the opposite of what we were about. And when I see this line, Lala Loopsy, I can see that, wow, this is just really done right. And I'm happy to see things done this well at that level. It raises the bar for specialty. I think, like, if you are if you're doing your own stuff and you want to keep it small, like the bar has really been raised. Like by the, you know, when we first started, we knew a lot of other guys who were like, yeah, the evil big guys and it's all garbage. And it's not. It's actually really high quality, and they're not evil. Like there are artists who, like, we knew a few guys who were kids in school when we first started who are now making this stuff. And they're like, you know, We see these guys in the same boat as, like, the guys we love on the other end, like Pete Fowler, like, who we adore and we thought was doing, always does brilliant work. Now some of the better stuff at mass market is really raising the bar. I'm actually really happy to see it. I just wish that there was a way to, I think with specialty, it's getting harder now. I think it's harder now than it was 10 years ago to make your own line and then keep it very small purposefully. I really love what Dihara does, and I really love what Lemaire, you know, Mike,
yep,
does.
Mike Kelly.
I think Lemaire, that's the epitome of the right way to do it on that level. I really admire, especially Dihara and the way he does it. And he's in the big world in a way, like with the Meiji
chocolates. That's like Hershey's of Japan,
yeah,
you know, basically. And he's doing, yeah,
but that balance, he's got it figured out perfectly.
Yeah,
you know,
he really did. Persevered, though. It's been a long career for him. He's actually, you know, for a young guy, I guess he's been around for a long time.
Well, he's the ultimate lesson. When we get a lot of emails from students, like art students or just guys starting out, like, well, actually, we got an email a few weeks ago. Hey, how soon do you think I can, like, reach that level? Right? Like, is it 6 months? Is it 7 months? Or is it, like, do you think it's going to be, like, 8 months? And so I just send him to dihara.com, and I go, read as far back as you can, and that's what you got to do.
Yeah, I think Dihara's been around doing his thing in his way for well over a decade.
Yeah.
You know, it predates Giant Robot, like, the stores. So it's been well over 11 years, and he's been doing projects, art, kind of, like, getting art on walls or, you know, his characters on walls. I think it's been well over a decade. So,
oh, yeah.
It's been a while. So how do you prevent ugly dolls? Well, maybe you don't think about it, but how do you prevent ugly dolls from becoming the project that kind of goes away and becomes that retro thing? You know what I'm saying? Like,
sure.
Like, there's so many, like, oh, look, My Little Pony's back. Hey, you guys are awesome.
Oh, but, you mean something that goes,
you know,
away?
It kind of goes away, but it becomes like this retro thing. And, you know, how do you prevent it? Or is that something you're looking toward? Like, I want, you know, you want ugly dolls to be, oh, yeah, it's so old now, it's retro. You know, it's cool. Like, is that a, you know what
I
mean?
Well, I think a lot of those comebacks are controlled. Like, I know a lot of the bigger companies, they'll actually pull everything with all intentions to bring it back in X number of years. And for them, that's a model. So for us, it means, those have died out. Yeah, those are gone. But actually, no, those were yanked at the right time. That's also a strategy.
Oh, wow.
I can't do any of that on purpose. We're just doing what we really...
So you're never going to pull Babbo and Ox and all the original eight or original...
Well, we had to stop making him for a little while just because we're not, we didn't have the capacity to make that. So, like, when we added all those newer characters, we sort of had to. But now that we're not bringing in as many new guys, we were able to get back to Babbo and Wage and those guys. We're making them again. We just couldn't. We can't make 50 characters all at the same time. And I think the other funny thing is, like, just looking at it as a toy, you don't really see the same toy made for more than now, like a year. Like, a year is really bizarre. If you're making the exact same toy for more than a year, that's strange. But we've, like, that Babbo and Wage is the exact same toy that we've been making for 10 years.
You know? Cool. And also, we just got in, like, salt and pepper shakers, like, there's housewares, right? Cookie jars, mugs, cups.
It's all the stuff that, it's all the things that we've always wanted to do, and now we're finally able to do them. And the one rule that we have is, what do we really love? Like, we always love little funny sculptural ceramic salt and pepper shakers. We love those old Tomy wind-up toys. That's why we did the wind-ups. And did them in the actual Tomy factory.
I know. I get to tell customers that. especially the ones who I look at, I go, okay, this person's going to remember. They'll remember what I'm talking about.
Most
people don't, but I remember as a kid, Isles, kind of a little display unit with all the different robots, usually POP area, point of purchase area.
Yeah.
They had all those little, like, wind-up Tomies there, so it's kind of neat to see Ugly Dolls following that tradition.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. It's kind of interesting, too, because you're kind of working with history a little bit, not just making new shit,
No, yeah. Well, that was really important. That's why you don't... for 10 years, we haven't really made that much. If you think about over a 10-year period, there probably should be a lot more than there is, I guess, really. Now we're just doing the things that we've all, like, I had the R2-D2 cookie jar when I was little, the kind of ceramic one. So I always wanted to do the Babbo cookie jar. And so when we were able to, we met up with the Grasslands Roads out there in upstate New York, and they're, like, the guys for doing ceramics.
Really?
Yeah, if you want, like...
Do they do the, the Sesame Street ones? And, the Cookie Monster cookie jar is,
that's
got to be one of the most popular cookie jars in history, right?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, no question.
It's Cookie Monster.
Yeah, you can't beat that. There's no going near that. But it's just everything from from my childhood, everything that I really loved as a kid, I now want to go do as an adult for kids and for adults.
That's awesome. So what's up on the close horizon?
Oh, we're working really hard on everything. Because now we're working 2 years out, whereas before we were always working for the next year. Now we're doing everything for 2014.
So that means you have, like, really odd products coming out?
Well,
you already know about.
it's hard for me. Well, because you also can't be as fast. You can't say, I want there to be a cookie jar in 6 months from now. Oh, let's go.
Right.
You've got to actually plan a little bit. Maybe that's good, though.
Why is that? Why can't you still strike out copies of things or, a new version? I want a purple cookie jar. Just, can you still make that in 6 months, or is that just something that still has to take 2 years?
Yeah, you can.
As a specialty kind of thing. I need this because Prince really wants a cookie jar. I don't know.
I would do it. Absolutely. We'll get that done, by the way. If you're listening, we can get that done in 3 months. I think it's a lot has to do with the... especially for toys, like the way safety works now has been completely reworked.
That's
a very good thing, but there's no such thing as just thinking of something and then your toy is done in 6 months anymore.
Right.
Unless, of course, you're making a real, hazardous eye gouger, which, might be what you want to... that might be what you're after. But if you want to make something that's okay for everybody, then it's gonna that right there takes a lot longer.
Are you seeing manufacturing move from, like, China to even, like, other places, like Malaysia? Because I look at tags of clothing I'm like, hey, what happened to China? Good old China?
It's that's true. There's a lot
of
change.
I'm like, what happened to good old Malaysia?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, Bangladesh? You know, like I'm seeing new kind of labels on a lot of clothing. So I'm wondering, is the toy thing kind of moving that way too for you? Or
might. I keep hearing about how it could go this way or that way. There's not been a major change yet in toys, I think, but it could. I think we're getting close to a point in history where it could a lot of it could even come back to the U.S. Maybe, you know, for certain things. That would be fantastic if we could do that.
Well, there was a time when was it Ugly Dolls? Wasn't it made in Korea first?
Not
Sunmin, but wasn't there like?
Well, yeah. Well, we're still all of our factories are they're Korean. You know, but
gotcha.
Then the assembly is done in China, and that's actually for safety. If we did the assembly anywhere else, you know, in neighboring right now, it would be a lot more expensive and just take way more time, just because we wouldn't be able to, especially with the safety.
Right.
But yeah, we're actually Ugly Doll is very much actually a Korean product.
That's pretty interesting.
Even the only Ugly Doll store is in Korea. You
know? Yeah, that's cool. Who gets to go there? Like, I've never been there.
I just got a request for directions from there was some I think it was someone who was working at Stitch in Tokyo. You know,
oh wow,
you know Stitch?
Yeah, yeah.
And they're going to Korea, and so they wrote us a letter and said, "Hey, how do I get to your store?"
That's so cool.
Luckily, it's easy to find. It's kind of like the one place in Korea where you just go automatically as a tourist by default. So, cool. I just told them just go ask them where you know it's called Samjigil. Yeah, I'm pronouncing that wrong already. But in a Insadong, which is kind of like this really beautiful traditional neighborhood, and then within that, in the center of that area, there's like a little kind of design art mall. It's kind of like the Soho of Seoul.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, as a tourist, you automatically go to Soho as one
right.
of your stops. Like,
sure.
It's sort of like that, I would say.
Cool, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for stopping in, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
Yeah. Ugly Dolls. Ugly Doll.
Giant robot. Yeah, Ugly Doll was born here, man.
Yeah, that's part of... I guess you recently mentioned that in LA Weekly, so I appreciate that.
Cool. Oh, yeah. I mention that everywhere.
Oh, thanks.
I'm going to go mention that outside right now. Who's that guy? Let's go flag him down. Hey, man.
Cool. Thanks a lot for listening. Say bye.
Bye-bye.